Hi, I'm Kate Hall, and I'm a graduate student at the University of Minnesota working with Kurt Spokas. At the meeting so far, we've heard a lot about the different uses and applications of biochar. But today, I'm going to be talking to you about the role of biochar as a sorbent. In our current work, our goal is to assess the potential use of biochar as a sorbent for organic contaminants of emerging concern. These can have applications, understanding these behaviors, in remediation efforts, preventative measures such as buffer strips, and water treatment. The different classes of compounds we're interested in include pharmaceuticals and personal care products, flame retardants, and pesticides, which will be the topic of today's talk. More specifically, I'm going to share our results regarding the interaction of biochar and glyphosate. Glyphosate is an herbicide that needs little introduction. Since it hit the market in the 1970s, it's become the most widely used herbicide throughout the world, and applications are only expected to increase in the near future. Research has shown that upon contact with soil, it's initially bound very strongly and doesn't typically pose a high leaching potential, particularly in soils with high iron and aluminum content. However, monitoring surveys have found that glyphosate has been detectable in different stream and groundwaters. So to remove glyphosate from water, the typical method includes the use of activated carbon. This led us to ask the question of, what about biochar? Biochar has been looked at as a sorbent for a wide variety of herbicides. However, glyphosate has received little attention. Of the data available, glyphosate has only been looked at on probably less than 5 different types of biochar, which we know are quite diverse. With this in mind, the objectives of our study were first to compare glyphosate absorption on different types of biochar made from different feedstocks, as well as over a range of pyrolysis temperatures. We also looked to evaluate the effects of metal addition on biochar sorption. Our motivation here comes from the ability of glyphosate to chelate metals and also data showing increased sorption on soils in the presence of metals. Finally, we look to determine the reversibility of glyphosate sorption. Once it binds to these biochars, how easily is it going to be removed? The biochars used in this study were made from 4 different feedstocks. We had 3 hardwood biochars made from pecan, apple, and cherry, and each of these were prepared at 4 different temperatures, ranging from 350 all the way up to 900 degrees Celsius. Our fourth feedstock, wood pellets, was used to prepare biochars at 350, 500, and 700 degrees. The wood pellets were also then used to create our metal-treated biochars. This was simply done by adding either 10% iron oxide or 5% copper sulfate to the wood pellets prior to pyrolysis. You can see it in the images here. At the top, we have that red color of the iron oxide coated wood pellets going into the pyrolysis system, and below we see the biochars as they're removed. To quantify the sorption here, we used a standard batch equilibration method with 14C labeled glyphosate. What this entails is simply adding a glyphosate solution. We used a concentration of 1 mg/L into centrifuge tubes containing the biochar. This is then shaken and equilibrated for about 24 hours, and the solution is analyzed by liquid scintillation counting. Whatever glyphosate is not in solution is assumed to then be sorbed to the biochar. Immediately following this sorption study, we also performed our desorption steps. This involved replacing a fraction of the supernatant with some fresh calcium chloride solution. It was again equilibrated and the solution analyzed to see if any of the glyphosate was coming off of the biochar. This was repeated a second time with calcium chloride and finally with potassium phosphate. For select biochars, we also looked at a wider range of concentrations, going from as low as 0.02 up to 10 mg/L, so we could construct isotherms. This table here offers a quick comparison of the biochars used in this study and how they sorb the glyphosate. First, looking at the hardwood biochars, you can see that the highest sorption occurred on our 900 degree chars. And while pecan and apple were quite similar, cherry had significantly lower sorption, removing only about 18% from solution. At the bottom of the table, we have our wood pellet, where again we see the highest sorption taking place on our highest temperature biochar. However, with the wood pellet, all of these sorption values are still relatively low. So we were hoping that with the addition of metal, we would see improved sorption here. Well, here are our results. The gray bars indicate the untreated biochar, the red show our iron treatments, and the yellow the copper. As you can see, not a lot happened. We didn't see any increased sorption with the metal treatments. Furthermore, we didn't see any correlations with the metal content of the untreated biochars and glyphosate sorption across the biochars studied. So then to shift back to our hardwood biochars where we saw more promise in sorption, we looked at the sorption in a bit more depth using that range of concentrations to fit our data with a Freund-like isother model, which you see at the top of the slide. With this, we were able to calculate a KF value, or a Freund-like sorption coefficient. A higher value indicates higher sorption. And again, we see that pecan and apple are similar, while cherry is much lower. Another telling value in this model is the 1 over N value. This can be indicative of concentration dependence. A 1 over N value of 1 would indicate no concentration dependence, or a perfectly linear isotherm. However, we're seeing values around 0.5 to 0.6, which tells us that there is a strong concentration dependence for these biochars. This is important because when you're considering how effective an adsorbent is going to be, you need to be looking at the realistic concentrations of the pesticide that would be found in the waters. So while biochar may not be an extremely effective sorbent for 100 part per million solutions, down at these lower concentrations, it does still appear to be effective. The last value in this table is an R-squared, simply showing the fit of this model. And at first glance, it seems pretty good. Not perfect, but not terrible. But then, when we look at the actual plot of the isotherm, instead of seeing a perfect line, we still see a degree of curvilinearity here. And while I've only shown the pecan, both the cherry and apple shared a very similar shape. So what this is telling us then is that there's some other factor at play. This led us to explore the pore distribution as a potential explanation for this variability in sorption we were seeing. So what we're looking at here are the SEM images of the raw feedstock materials. So these are just the wood chips prior to pyrolysis. And in these images, there's a few things worth noting. When you look at the pecan and apple, you can see that there's a variety of pore sizes. The resolution on here isn't spectacular, but if you trust me, there are some smaller pores on what looks like a smoother area. And we also see these different types of crevices here, where you can imagine solution can work its way into. But if we look at the cherry, in contrast, we see a much more uniform pore distribution and what appears to be fewer total pores. What's also worth noting is that we see these smooth areas that don't have those same crevices and appear to be somewhat of a dead end for any solution moving into this material. These observations are in agreement with some of the basic properties of these woods. With the specific gravity, cherry is lower than either pecan and apple, and this could be due to more air-filled pores. If the water is unable to move into the space, we would see a lower density. And this also matches with the lower moisture content of the cherry wood. Another property is the hardness, or the force it takes to break this wood. And we see that cherry, again, is lower than the other two. And this is indicative of the pour arrangement here, it may be telling us that while the pecan and apple have more disordered pores, here we see all the pores grouped together, and we might have more of a cleavage type breaking that's happening. So then how does this relate to the biochars? Well, if we look at the SEM images side by side, on the left we have the raw feedstock, and on the right the 900 degree biochar, we can see that quite a bit of the structure is maintained. We don't have any new pores forming, and we also don't see the ones that are present being collapsed a lot. Another property that appeared to be retained was the moisture content when we compare the three. Cherry wood had the lowest moisture content, and the biochar also had the lowest moisture content at all four temperatures we studied. Finally, for our desorption data, when we initially tried to desorb the glyphosate with calcium chloride, you can see that after even two desorption steps, nothing was removed. So it appeared that the glyphosate was irreversibly bound in the presence of calcium chloride solution. However, as soon as we added potassium phosphate, it was significantly desorbed. We saw between 65 and 85% released after a 24-hour equilibration period. This is important to consider because if biochars are being used in the field where phosphate would be present with fertilizers, instead of holding onto this glyphosate, it could easily be released into solution. So based on our data, what we're able to conclude is that select high temperatures do show promise as a sorbent for glyphosate. However, when we compare these values to activated charcoal, we don't see them surpassing that as a sorbent. With regards to the feedstock materials, we found that even if you're looking at a relatively similar group of feedstocks, for example, the hardwoods, there's still a lot of variability that can result. From our iron and copper additions, we saw no catalytic effects from the cations. And finally, for desorption, we found that glyphosate was not easily removed with calcium chloride. However, phosphate is an important factor to consider. Thank you.
So when you added your cations, you listed it as iron oxide and copper sulfate. Did they go on as dry powders or they've been on solutions?
Dry powders.
In your absorption studies, you used just a 24-hour equilibration, is that correct?
Yes.
Did you look at the kinetics of absorption? If you had a longer equilibration time, did that change the story?
We did not quantify that here, but based on previous literature, we found that 24 hours should be sufficient. A lot of studies have used as short as 4 hours with glyphosate. But then, since we followed up with the desorption experiments, we also didn't see anything being absorbed in those post periods. So we had 24 hours for the initial equilibration, replaced some of the supernatant, but then we shook for another 24 hours, another 24 after that. And so we didn't see anything going on to the biochar that would have made us particularly concerned that we hadn't hit equilibration, but we didn't perform the kinetics ourselves, no.
I just wonder about whether you've got diffusion.
I think that's porosity. The point is you look at these studies where it's just been on soil, and it's different with the biochar. So when I saw your isotherm there, I was questioning that too. So you had some type of, if whether you were truly were at equilibrium.
That's something to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is glyphosate a Swear ion at that pH?
Yes, I believe so.
So is it possible that you have the glyphosate is absorbing by a cation exchange mechanism, and then it's not really the phosphate that's displacing it, but the potassium of the potassium phosphate that's displacing it?
I suppose that could be. We haven't looked too much at the mechanism. Typically in soil, it's found to bind more through the phosphate moiety, but we haven't performed any analysis to quite get at that.
All right. Thank you.